Teo tugged on her. What now?
Anxiety gripped Lu. Any moment, Vex could come looking for her. Etta could find Teo missing. Ignoring the scream of objection from her better self, she bent closer to Teo.
You see this corner? Right in here by the door?
She pointed to the double door's alcove.
Stay here, I'm going to chart our path.
Teo crossed his arms.
I can come, I'm supposed to find the boat too.
You will, but I need you to stay here and keep watch. If you see anything, shout and keep on shouting until I get back to you. If not the meander, surely Lu would find a transportation option within shouting range of this building.
I thought the game was to be quiet.
Lu winced.
That was before we got out.
This is different, she pointed at the floor. Stay here and wait for me to come back. I won't be long, I promise.
Teo nodded. I'll be good. You can trust me.
He dropped, curled into a ball, and stared straight at the door. Lu moved before she could rethink leaving him alone in this decrepit tenement building where anyone could come out and see a defenseless little boy. What were her options? She had no idea what prowlers populated Port Mezitib. Lu swallowed her objections and utter self-hatred and pushed her way outside. Night had lifted some of the dense humidity, making it easier to breathe. Lu heard raucous shouting on the left, along with the whining of a stringed instrument. A tavern. She headed to the right, trying to smell her way to a river. But every road stank the same, the musk of mold and the rancidness of festering waste. Lu strained to hear any noise from behind, either Teo screaming or voices in search of them, but each step she took weighed on her. She cut down a road, slinking through shadows to avoid men heading in the opposite direction, and paused to think under a holy awning. A river couldn't be this difficult to find. Had she gone far enough west? Should she?
I know your type.
Lu's heart shot into her throat. Kansu leaned against the doorway of a closed butchery, her body wrapped in shadows.
Self-absorbed Grace Lorraeans who'll sell out raiders for half a Gaia,
Kansu continued.
You're off to warn the council about our uprising, aren't you? Fatima told you. You won't survive betraying us.
Lu pushed past as if she didn't find Kansu a threat.
I won't betray you. This has nothing to do with the Tunkians.
She turned a corner, Kansu just behind her, and finally a river appeared between the buildings. The other bank of the waterway showed the city suffused in the late hour's blue-black hue, with silhouetted people shuffling down the roads. Lu looked downriver, then up. The light from the half-crescent moon might have been weak, but it lit enough that she could see a boat tethered a few paces down, on the opposite bank. The meander? She doubted her luck was that good. Something metal poked her ribcage. A knife. Molten terror swept down Lu's spine.
You won't kill me here, she tried.
I'm a raider head. I've killed people all over these rivers. I'm not about to let some Grace Lorraine brat warn the council that you've killed people all over these rivers, Lu repeated.
She looked over her shoulder with a grim smile.
So have I.
She rammed her elbow back. Kansu dodged, thrown off enough that Lu had time to spin, sweep Kansu's legs, and send the raider head crashing to the muddy road. Lu took off up the riverbank. The walkway was narrow, buildings pressed so close on her left that she kept a hand on the scratchy wood to steady herself, the stones of the shore disintegrating under her boots to the right. A thumping carried from behind, Kansu pursuing. Lu ran faster as she came upon the moored boat. She eyed the distance across the river to it. She would have to swim. The thought of sinking into the polluted, oily water made her stomach spasm. But she drew a breath and tripped, catching herself on the windowpane of a building. Behind her, Kansu struggled up the walkway, but Lu ignored her to get a look at what had felled her. A log. She slid her fingers under it. The bark didn't crumble in her hands. It might hold her weight across the river. But all her plans clattered away as the log
moved.
The rough wood squirmed against her palm. Lou jolted upright, her foot hitting the edge of the slick riverbank, sending her crashing back to the ground.
Shadows listed as the log rose, swung around, and looked at her, two glassy eyes blinking over a jagged snout.
A crocodile. Lou didn't move, didn't breathe. Her eyes stayed on the crocs, every nerve strung too taut to function.
Crocodiles populated the southern swamplands, but outside of that they were rare, so rare that seeing one here petrified her.
"Whoa there!"
a voice bellowed. Not Kansu. The steamboat on the other side of the river had sailed over, its engine rattling. The dark hull, battered with lack of upkeep, stopped so close Lou could have touched it. It wasn't the Meander. Lanterns sprang to life on the deck. One of the men aboard looped a cord around the croc's neck, pinning it at the end of a long rod.
"Well, now, what did my pet catch me tonight?"
he drawled.
Lou didn't need to look at him to know who he was.
These raiders were the only ones who would have animals from back swamp, raiders from the Mecht Syndicate. Downstream, Lou heard nothing. She risked a glance. The walkway was empty. Kansu had left her to fend off these men alone.
Mud soaked into Lou's backside as she stared into the crocodile's eyes. The leash around its neck wasn't comforting. One move and it could snap its jaw around her ankle, haul her deep into the river, thrash her around the bottom over and over until her lungs filled with water. Teo would be left alone until Vex found him, or Kansu, most likely. Lou transferred her gaze from the croc to the mecked raider. He smiled, his sweaty cheeks pale in his boat's lantern light.
"Look what we got here."
He kicked one leg up to lean on the railing, chewing as he sneered at her.
"Heard a tip that Bell'd been spotted in this area. You're not what I was hoping for, but you'll be useful. Now, where's that captain of yours?"
They wanted Vex? How did they know she was with him? "He's not my captain," Lou said. But, damn it, what cover would be best? Would it work to have them believe she was his prisoner, or his crew member, or an errant bystander? The mecht tugged on the leash, and the croc clicked its jaw in a threat that made Lou jolt.
"I was looking for him," Lou tried, her voice high and fast. "I thought your boat was his."
"Uh-huh," the mecht repeated. "See, I'm not so sure about that."
He didn't tug this time. He let the rod go limp. The croc dove at her, its massive jaw opening. Part of Lou knew it would be a trick again, a hiss and a snap only to scare her. She couldn't process the feeling of teeth in her leg. She watched, muscle and flesh tearing as the croc clamped its jaw into the meat of her left calf. The sensation came to her slowly, her mind removed so the pain traveled up her leg, creeping through her belly until it ruptured out of her mouth in a scream. Like a dozen weighted daggers slicing into her leg, like the force of 100 bullets exploding into her nerves all at once. Lou gagged, a broken shriek filtering through her clamped lips. The mecht tightened the leash, keeping his pet close enough so the croc held Lou's shin like a clamp. Blood leaked down the creature's teeth, dribbling onto the mud as the croc dug its claws into the bank, readying, needing to drag her into the river. Lou fought the desire to arch back, to fight. Her needs were as strong as the croc's, frenzied and feral, and all she wanted was to grab one of her knives and impale the creature between its eyes. But even the movement of breathing tore its teeth deeper into her leg.
"Now I ask again," the mecht said. "Where is Devereaux Bell?"
"Burn in hell,"
Lou rasped, sweat pouring down her face. The mecht smirked.
"I intend to, but I'll bring you with me."
He waved at some of his crew, who leaped off the boat and landed next to Lou. The captain clicked his tongue twice, and the croc opened its jaw, breaking free of her leg. The teeth ripping out of her flesh were almost more painful than the bite. Lou bit down on her tongue to keep from screaming again. "Don't draw attention. Teo probably already heard." She was so distracted by pain and the certainty that Teo would show up at any moment that Lou forgot the men until they grabbed her arms. They lifted her awkwardly, sending all her weight rushing onto her injured leg. She moaned, hands in quivering fists. The crew tossed her aboard. The captain crouched before her on the deck as his men clambered back onto the boat and the engine revved, steam chugging into the sky. Now that Lou was closer, she saw the bloodshot veins around the captain's pupils, the bruised quality under his eyes of someone on a narcodium creeper high.
"Think Vex'll come to save you?"
he drawled. Lou panted.
"I don't need him to save me."
The mech dug at one of the tooth punctures his croc had made in her leg, finger crooking into her muscle.
Stars swam over Lou's vision. All she could see was blackness, throbbing and hot, and she dropped to the side, retching on the deck as that blackness became too powerful, too enticing.
"You better hope he comes after you,"
the mech said, rising to tower over her.
"If he doesn't, you'll get to see more Southern Stream Raider hospitality."
"Don't faint."
Lou braced herself on the deck, spitting vomit on the boards.
"Observe, plan, act."
But each blink sent her vision spiraling further, her body drifting in a current of debilitating pain, pain as she had endured once before. The memory of it made her erratic pulse hum.
She had known men like these, but Argridian soldiers. A night like this, only 5 years ago.
The rebel headquarters instead of a steamboat, tied to a chair instead of sprawled on a deck. Then, the clanking of vials. A voice.
"Drugger."
Lou heard it so distinctly from her memory that when she saw the captain's lips move, she shook her head, not understanding him until he added,
"Lazenade, it'll keep her nice and quiet till we get back."
Lazenade. Rare, coin-shaped green leaves, made into a paste, rubbed on the skin, causes immobilization. The taker retains consciousness, counteracted by the speed-giving plant, Incris. Despair pulled every sense toward a collective unraveling. Lou shoved onto her hands and hurled her body at the railing, with enough momentum that she started to go overboard. But the mech's crocodile barred her escape. It snapped up against the boat, water spurting from the river, bloodied teeth flashing at her head. Lou dropped backward, her mangled leg tearing on a crate next to the railing. She was unconscious before she hit the deck. Vex and his crew didn't find Lou or Teo in the sanctuary, and none of the Tunkians had seen them, which left the surrounding city, or the jungle. So, anywhere. Vex wanted nothing more than to keep stomping around the sanctuary's streets like a madman, but he made himself stop. He needed to think like Lou. Where would a politician, assassin, botanical magic expert go when she thought she'd been betrayed? Well, thought wasn't the right word. He'd known from the beginning that she'd be pissed when she found out he had Argridian connections. But damn the pious god above, he hadn't kidnapped Milo Ibarra, and he'd been running away from Argrid when he'd ended up in jail, which he'd have told her if she'd stayed instead of racing off. Stubborn, infuriating. Wait, was it so terrible that she was gone? He didn't need her. He could do what Nyeli'd suggested. Find his Argridian contacts, see if Argrid had some plot afoot to retake Grace Luray and if he could stop it. But Lou's payment tempted him, taunted him, any magic concoction he wanted. A shiver vibrated up Vex's spine. Unable to come up with any brilliant revelations about where Lou had gone, he shouted at the ground, which wasn't helpful and didn't make him feel better. Movement came at him from two directions, his crew emerging from a path beside him and a shadow in front of him that he whipped his head toward. A door opened in one of the tenement buildings. Kansu shot out, dragging something, someone, behind her. The look on her face was so wrong that Vex had to blink twice.
Regret?
What the? Vex's attention shifted behind her.
Teo.
Lu wasn't with them. Didn't come stumbling out after them. Nayeli and Etta joined him. Vex was pretty damn sure his chest was about to combust.
Found him sitting by the door,
Kansu explained, depositing Teo in front of them.
Where's Lu?
Teo asked, hands in fists.
I heard her. I think I heard her.
He eyed Kansu, wary, afraid.
What did you do?
Nayeli rose to the offense. Etta went to Teo and picked him up, and Teo seemed to relax, though he didn't look away from Kansu.
I caught her running,
Kansu snapped.
She was gonna turn on us.
I might have attacked her. Her words got less aggressive.
Some mechs showed up. Looking for you, Vex.
Vex curled his hands into fists, mimicking Teo.
They caught her but didn't see me.
Kansu rubbed a hand through her hair. She wouldn't meet anyone's eyes.
They had a croc and let it get hold of her leg. Thought she'd tell him everything. Where to find you, so I was ready to raise all kinds of hell.
Kansu finally looked up.
But she didn't say a damn thing. They took her anyway.
Vex felt 100 different things. Every one of them brand new. Lu might have left out of fear of his betrayal, but she wasn't vindictive. He might be able to convince her that he wasn't the heartless criminal she thought he was. But for years, he had been heartless, ignoring injustices, living only for himself. Vex cared suddenly that Lu knew he was a good person, that she didn't hate him. With that need, or maybe because of it, he was overcome with mind-numbing fury. Vex pointed at Kansu.
You're going to help us.
She balked.
Excuse me? Look, this is partly your fault too, all right? Lu wouldn't have run if you hadn't threatened war.
Well, she likely would have run when she found out about Vex's Argridian involvement, but still.
You think you can make Grace Lorray a lawless island of syndicates? Argrid'll be burning people again so fast. That's why they got a hold last time. Because no one syndicate is enough to stop them. Lu was right. There's another way.
Kansu folded her arms, livid but controlled.
What way is that? Rescue Lu. Find Ibarra like she wanted.
Vex was shaking. He'd never felt this before. Something like valiant.
Take them both back to the Council and sort out this whole mess peacefully. The Council will have to recognize you as separate from the Mecht Syndicate if you return Ibarra, and they'll be willing to listen. You don't want war, Kansu. No one does.
Peace is always better,
Etta added. Of all his crew, Vex was glad she'd spoken up. It was impossible to argue with her when she felt strongly about something.
War may sound like a noble cause, but watching your family get slaughtered ain't noble. Better to wound your ego with compromise than feed your own pride with blood.
Kansu's nose twitched. She looked close to agreeing, so Vex didn't let her think long. He looked at Nayeli, who nodded, and they made for the nearest shack to start planning how to get Lu back. Etta fell in beside him with Teo. The Mechts were still looking for Vex. If they were Argridian lackeys now, they were probably hunting anyone trying to escape Argrid's service. It wouldn't have been hard for them to hear about Lu being on his crew and take her to draw him out.
Oh, it'd draw him out, all right.
If he'd needed a push to commit taking a stand against Argrid and the hell they unleashed, this was it. No one fucked with his crew. No one.
20. The day after visiting the Mecht in Grace Neus Cathedral, Ben was in a stupor. On the edge of his awareness, he felt Yakis move around his apartments. Sometimes he heard silence, sometimes Yakis's distant, exhausted voice. Ben knew nothing but the plants on his desk, the notes in his ledgers, the mortars and pestles and possibility.
He had plants from the chest he'd salvaged from the university. Not many, but enough. He was, surprisingly, able to access aid money from the Mechts, which let him have what he needed. Still, Eleazar did not come to stop him. Ben lit a candle under an iron bowl and saw the Mechts' blue eyes churning like the sea. He ground up helica and alova pipe and saw the Mecht doubled over on the floor, fighting for consciousness. Ben would one day rule a country that captured people and called their resistance evil. A country that had never needed a strong military because faith fostered obedience in each Argridian, in their soul and their being. And when people resisted, the church killed them. He put the pestle to the cleanse root and broke it down. A lifetime later, he fell into the chair at his desk. Soot and sweat stained the rolled edges of his sleeves as he steepled his fingers against his lips and stared at the glass jar perched on the edge of his desk. Helica. Alova pipe. Cleanse root. The three healing plants he'd had in that chest. He'd followed the methods Rodrigo had taught him, but taken them further, grinding and dissolving and cooking, so all that remained was the essence of the plant's magic. Ben felt as though he'd look up and see Paxbin leaning over his desk, offering comments or turning to ask his father a question. And Rodrigo would slap Ben on the shoulder and say how such ingenuity was the sort of thinking that the Inquisitors valued. He'd done it. Maybe. Whatever he had, there was enough to test on one person, two if he limited the doses to sips. Ben leaned back in his chair, his hope venting on further complications. How would he test it? He had no true allies. Some of Rodrigo's contacts might be alive, but how would Ben find them if they'd evaded the church this long? No, Ben had to do this on his own. If he went back to the holding cells under Grace Neuth, he could test the potion on that man he'd seen with shaking sickness. It wouldn't hurt him. At worst, it just wouldn't work. Best case, it'd cure him, and Ben could go around Argrid giving ill people permanent health, explaining as he went that it was because of magic, not the pious god. He stood, stoppering the glass jar, and was halfway to the door when Yakis opened it. Tension had been coiled around Ben and Yakis since the moment in the cathedral's stairwell. The feeling was palpable now when Yakis saw the jar in Ben's hand.
You finished it? A healing potion?
Ben's body went numb.
I need to test it, he said, a truth, finally. Though I'm not sure.
Something in Yakis's expression changed. A crack formed.
I know how you can make this work,
Yakis whispered.
I know who you need to heal.
What?
Trust me.
He smiled. Ben agreed without question, swept up by the joy on Yakis's face, by the hope in the jar in his hand. This was it. The beginning he'd waited for, the start of a new, stronger Argrid. If Yakis saw what he could do, maybe they could change Argrid side by side. The two of them raced outside into the still-breaking dawn. Ben had spent a full day ensconced in his room. He had barely felt the time pass, and he was so caught up in rethinking his development of the tonic that he didn't realize where they were going until their carriage stopped. He stared up at the tall gray building.
Grace News? Trust me,
Yakis said again, opened the door, and leaped out. Ben followed. The cathedral was busier now, monksies and monksas fluttering around cleaning. More visitors sat in the pews, conversations filling the air. Yakis led him up the side aisle toward the staircase they had gone down one night ago. This was where Ben had intended to go to test his potion. Why would Yakis bring him here, too? He could have remembered the shaking sickness prisoner as Ben had. But why did Ben's stomach twist? On the lower floor, Yakis shot forward. They walked past cells with people on their knees, others thrashing and weeping on their cots. Monksies stood in one cell, praying over someone who screamed their innocence. The injustices had been easier to ignore at night.
They reached the mech's cell. True to Ben's command, the Monxies had unchained and unmuzzled him, and he was now sprawled on the floor with his back to the wall. He didn't stir at their passing, his eyes closed. Ben touched the jar at his hip and left a silent promise at his cell that it would be over soon. No more pain, no more ignorance, only understanding. The shaking sickness patient thrashed in the cell across from the mechs. Outside, a man stood watching the prisoner writhe. Ben's brain tripped when he saw the man, but Yakis walked forward, beaming as though he'd expected this visitor to be here. Ben shook his head. He couldn't comprehend what was happening.
Eleazar, in Grace Neus Cathedral's holding cells. Eleazar smiling.
And Yakis saying,
"He's done. The prince is ready to join our holy crusade, Eminence."
21. Lu awoke to the odor of vomit and mold. A moment after that, her other senses came too, muscles stretching and throbbing. Relief swept over her. She could still feel her body, which meant the mech'd raiders had not used Lazenade as they had threatened. Her gratitude evaporated when the wound on her leg screamed with pain. She bolted upright with a hiss. At some point in her delirium, she'd been given a strip of stained fabric to stop the bleeding, but it surely had doubled her risk of infection. Though being in the cargo hold of a ship where cleanliness was an afterthought had guaranteed one. Lu left a hand on her knee, as close as she dared get to the teeth marks for now, and surveyed the room. Ropes tied boxes and barrels to the walls, and a single iron door led, presumably, to the rest of the lower deck. The mechs had taken her weapons, and from the shouts of activity above decks and the vibrations in the floor, she knew they were moving.
But Teo is safe. He could have run back to the sanctuary, or Kansu could have him.
Lu swallowed and steeled herself. Fear for Teo would do nothing but hinder her. He was smart, and Kansu couldn't be heartless enough to harm a child. He would be fine, and Lu would break out of this ship and be back with him by nightfall. But should she escape? She was in the custody of the raider syndicate that had taken Milo. Whether to protest the Council's unfair treatment or because Argrid had convinced them to stage the abduction. If Lu stayed, she could find out if Argrid had masterminded this to weaken Grace Luray, or if the mechs were stoking only a civil war. Appalling that Lu even thought the phrase, only a civil war. Vex was a factor now, though. Vex, whose motives were a mystery and who had lied from the beginning. If Vex was a pawn of Argrid's and he decided Lu's actions didn't work in his favor, Teo could become a hostage. Lu couldn't tell if her reasoning was rational or if it came from the terrified place in her chest that refused to be at anyone's mercy. This situation had spiraled so far out of her control that if she thought too long about it, she found it impossible to breathe. Return to the sanctuary. Get Teo. Then take the information I've gathered and let my parents form a plan. Lu grabbed the nearest crate and shoved herself upward, standing on her uninjured leg. Dizziness rocked her, but she hobbled a step and opened the first crate.
I've gotten out of worse situations than this, like the fourth mission I went on.
The one in Port Fausta, she said, talking to combat the agony. Inside the crate, dozens of wrapped bundles sat like treats at the bakery where she'd bought pastries for Annalisa and Teo.
That one was bad. Every person in that tavern was an Argridian soldier.
Lu lifted a package and unraveled it. Rations. Dried meat. She returned the lid and moved to the next crate. Clean bandages, or at least clean fabric. She took one and bent to rewrap her leg, her vision spiraling as she peeled the old bandage out of the deep, maroon-black wounds.
One little girl was out of place in that tavern.
Lu steadied herself on a breath.
I escaped by sliding out of that garbage chute. It was the first time I got shot.
Lou teetered, landed on her injured leg, and nausea ripped through her, a gray veil flickering over her eyes.
I think I'd rather be shot, she hissed, and tore open the next crate.
Inside lay vials of plants. Lou grabbed one, her body going numb in a swell of hope. A healing plant? She shook the vial, eyeing the green leaves. Bright mint? That the Mechts had bright mint, known for its ability to increase mental alertness, was not unusual. They could have purchased it at any market. More unsettling was the fact that the entire crate contained vials of it, a plant found in northern Lake Regolith, not the Mecht Syndicate's territory. They could have traded for it, but what would the Mechts need with so much bright mint? It wasn't particularly lucrative on any market. Lou hobbled to the next crate, finding rows of bundled narcodium creeper. Ah, now this could be useful. She could find the boat's wine or water supply, clean her leg as well as she could, and dump in the narcodium creeper. In high concentration, its juices caused hallucinations, and in smaller doses induced relaxation. Either way, it would be a matter of waiting for the crew to drink and letting the plant take effect so she could escape. But the captain had been chewing on narcodium creeper, as the Mechts were well known for. No doubt most of the crew had the same addiction and tolerance. Lou would have to put a great many leaves into the water supply to make any difference. But what other option did she have? Lou grabbed bundles of narcodium creeper and surveyed the room. Three barrels sat in the front corner, but as Lou moved, the ship lurched, grinding to a halt. She dropped, landing on her forearms while her mangled legs smashed into the floor. Sparks of pain shot up her body. Above decks, feet stomped, the thundering of more raiders than had been on the boat earlier. Lou clawed across the floor and up the barrels. She shoved her fingers under the lid of one, splinters breaking off in her nails as footsteps descended the ladder. It was like the tavern in Port Fausta all over again, only this time, the hatch that had released her into the night would not prove so helpful. The door opened. Lou dropped, hanging limp off the closed barrel, the narcodium creeper falling unused to the floor. In the doorway stood Ingvar Pilkvist. His chest was bare beneath a crocodile skin vest, pistols strapped across his torso, a machete at his waist. Wooden toggles swung in his long white hair, and his blue eyes might have been kind, if not for the way he watched her. Hands on his hips, lips peeled in a smile. If the head of the Mecht Syndicate had taken it upon himself to come see her, this was as deadly as Lou had feared. And she had no other plan. For now. The Mecht Raider Syndicate had claimed the southern third of Grace Luray as their territory. So it followed that one of their bases would be deep in an area that even the legal magic extractors preferred not to visit. Back Swamp. The swamp ran the full length of Grace Luray's southern shore, a waterlogged tangle of cypresses, willows, mangroves, and other trees that clawed their roots into the slimy waters. The branches formed a continuous roof that thickened the humidity, and the bloated rivers had congealed into one unbroken body. Crocodiles and snakes, thicker than a man's thigh, glided between dilapidated bungalows owned by the most resilient residents, and darkness ruled, a world where the sun couldn't reach. Hours later, Lou and her captors arrived at their destination. Stilts held a building, if it could be called that, over the water, each leg straining under the wear of river sludge and the weight of the home. The walls, roof, and floor were planks of wood that had endured far too long in Back Swamp's soggy climate. The docks that floated around the bungalow drooped in the water, jostling under raiders as they unloaded their cargo. More bungalows stood beyond. One released fiddle music into the air. The other held stumbling, drunk raiders on a long deck, a community of outlaws.
Lou saw it through new eyes. Outlaws or mechts with no other options? This area looked as poor as Port Mezitib, but it was harder to milk empathy from this situation when a raider threw her over his shoulder and hauled her off the boat. Hilkvist disembarked and led his group into the main structure. The raider who had Lou slung over his shoulder had to balance her to climb the ladder. Remarkably, it didn't break, and neither did the bungalow as they entered and the raider deposited Lou on the floor. Furs draped from the ceiling. Carvings of animals decorated the furniture. One piece in particular, a massive oak chair, had an intricate relief of a white bear on the back. Its jaws spread and its lips curled in a vicious, hungry snarl. A table held steins and platters of shredded meat and fish. All links to the Mechtlans, a country these people had long since left or never even seen. Hilkvist dropped into a chair at the table. One of the half-dozen raiders who had accompanied him burst forward and grabbed a carafe and stein, pouring a shaky amber stream of ale before backing away like a brow-beaten servant. Lou propped herself up, her legs stretched before her, blood leaking through the bandage. Sweat soaked her clothes, her hair sticking to her neck and face as she fought to subdue her labored breaths. Hilkvist took a sip.
We got news that a lady had run off with Devereaux Bell. First I thought it was a con of his, but now that I see you...
He made a great show of taking her in, which intensified Lou's glare.
Yes,
Pilkvist said with a smirk.
He'll come for you.
His eyes fell to her leg, and he snapped something in another language. The Mechtlans had almost as many languages as they did clans. The raider who poured his ale made for a chest in the corner, his arms shaking. He withdrew a vial of orange paste and tossed it into Lou's lap. Helica.
Can't have you dying before he comes.
Pilkvist stood, straightening his vest.
Now, it'd make this a lot easier if you...
He cocked his head. It took Lou a beat longer to hear the squeal of ladder rungs. Then, a knock on the door. Pilkvist lifted an eyebrow at Lou as he waved to one of his men to answer.
It would appear someone followed us. Good work, child.
But when the door opened, it was not Vex, as both Pilkvist and Lou had expected. Kansu strode into the room as though this were her own syndicate. Three of her raiders trailed her, every limb strapped with weapons. The anticipatory joy on Pilkvist's face disappeared. Lou kept her own face expressionless. Kansu? Not Vex? And why had Lou assumed, for that breath between the pause and the knock, that Vex had come for her?
Pilkvist,
Kansu said, her grip on two pistols tucked into her waistband. Pilkvist faced her, not bothering to return her unspoken threat. The machete as long as his thigh said enough, its handle glinting bronze at his waist.
Don't tell me you're here for her,
he nodded at Lou.
When did the Tunkian Syndicate start giving a shit about an unaligned crew? This isn't your business, Darzi. Get the hell out of my territory.
I'm not here for the girl. I'm here about that Argridian you got stowed away.
Lou shot Kansu a tight frown. But Kansu wouldn't look at her, and Lou couldn't tell if it was so Kansu wouldn't give something away, or because she truly had come to discuss Milo. An uneasy feeling gnawed at Lou the longer Kansu stood there, her raiders eyeing the Mecht raiders, the whole room taut with pressure. Pilkvist bellowed a laugh.
An Argridian! Here! You're out of your damn mind.
I'm not the one whose entire syndicate is strung out on their own product half the time. So no, I'm not out of my mind.
Hilkvist's pale face went red, his lips wrinkling. But Kansu kept talking, pacing around the room with ease. She lifted a stein, examining the carvings.
I should thank you, she said,
thumb running over the metal rim of the cup. Someone needed to send a message to the Council. It's about time we reminded them who helped them get the power they've been abusing. If not for us, our grid would have kept control of the revolutionaries' headquarters, and the war would have ended quite differently.
Hilkvist hooked his thumbs in his belt loops.
Well, we may have had our differences in the past, Darzi, but you're finally starting to sound all right.
Kansu set down the stein.
So you did take the Argridian?
Hilkvist smiled. Lou didn't let herself breathe.
Kansu returned his smile with a harsh one. You planning on attacking? I want in.
Attack? Hilkvist chuckled. I'm not getting my hands that dirty. My job's done. Now I get to sit back and watch the Council collapse and reap the rewards.
Kansu's facade faltered, a ripple on the surface of a lake.
What? I got someone else doing the hard work. Someone who wants the Council gone as much as we do. Give it about a week, Darzi. Maybe two. You'll see.
All the blood in Lou's head drained out, making her teeter, dizzy. Hilkvist couldn't mean.
He didn't mean. Was Argrid coming?
Kansu blanched.
I've been hearing of Council soldiers all over this island, arresting my people and your people because you're taking orders from someone else.
You got no right judging me.
Hilkvist cut her off. For the first time, he looked sincere.
Nothing's wrong in Tunkey, so when people come here, they aren't running from anything. But the Mechtlans? My whole syndicate is made up of people who came to escape death. When Grace Lorraine's revolution ended, we thought it'd mean freedom. Little did we know that freedom was only for certain folks on this island. I'm tired of Mechts getting treated like mindless barbarians. I'm tired of the Council stripping away my ability to help my own people. Argrid gave me the means to change things. You bet your self-righteous ass I'm gonna.
Argrid,
Kansu spat the name.
You're in bed with them now, and they're coming here? What the hell have you gotten yourself?
They've changed,
Hilkvist said.
Argrid knows what they did wasn't right. They even agreed to change New Deeza back to Port Vajorn. And they promised to...
He kept talking, saying things that made Lou's heart fracture. Hilkvist had, in a way, done this to shake awareness into the Council after all. Lou had known of the clan wars and the Mechtlans, but had always written them off as the natural state of things. But it wasn't natural. The Council should have analyzed it more closely, like everything they dismissed because they didn't see immigrants or raiders as people. No one saw them as Grace Lorraine. Now Argrid had taken advantage of the disunity on Grace Lorraine. They wanted the Council at odds with their only possible allies, the raiders, so Argrid could finish the cleansing they'd started decades ago.
Argrid's attack was coming. In, what had Hilkvist said? 1 week? 2 at most.
Lou looked at Kansu, who stared sadly back at her. In that sadness, Lou saw her realize that the uprising she had wanted was becoming infinitely more complex.
Hilkvist, Lou said.
She snapped her eyes from Kansu to the Mecht Raider head, who gave her a startled look as though he had forgotten Lou was here.
Argrid spent decades trying to cleanse this island of people like you. What makes you think they'll give you anything now? Are they really a better ally than the Council?
Once, she might have posed the question as an attack. Now she wanted an answer that would help her understand why he had chosen this route. But she knew. The Council had promised fairness and equality, but delivered threats and blame. Argrid had killed raiders, but they had never made promises. Now that they had, who would Lou have trusted? Someone who had already proven to be a liar, or someone who claimed to have learned from their past mistakes? Pilkvist ignored her with a wave of his hand, and Lu knew she deserved the dismissal.
Take her to a cell. We have Vex to clean up.
He turned to Kansu.
You don't know where he is, do you?
Lu snatched the vial of Helica before hands lifted her. She buckled, biting back a whimper, and Kansu's eyes met hers once more.
Haven't seen Belle in weeks,
Kansu said.
What?
Lu kept the confusion off her face as raiders forced her to the back of the room. Down a short hall, the mech raiders took her to a room full of crude iron bars that formed four narrow pens. A prisoner sat in the cell across from the one where the raiders tossed Lu. A patched cloak draped around their body. Even during the revolution, Milo had worn the attire of his station. Bruised and beaten, holding a dented scabbard, he'd donned tattered silken shirts and fine breeches. Whoever that was could not be Milo. But he wouldn't be in a cell, would he? He wasn't a prisoner. Who even knew where he was now? The mechs likely had any number of places to hide him. Or he could have been gone, too, on his way back to Argrid. Though, if war was coming for Grace Luray, Milo would stay to see it through. The raiders holding Lu confirmed that the other prisoner was not Milo.
Who's that?
One asked. Another gave an uncertain grunt.
Must have caught some idiot trying to poach in our territory. Dumbass.
The first raider laughed, and they left, closing the main door behind them. Lu lost her feeble grip on self-control. Sweat broke out down her spine, made her palms slick, but she forbade herself to think about all that had happened. She dropped to the floor and opened the Helica, removing her bandage to scrub the cream into her wounds. Each touch burned, but Lu forced the medicinal magic in, a silent scream parting her lips. When she finished, the worst of her wounds mended under the Helica. Another application of the plant, and her injuries would be gone.
Poor dear, the other prisoner croaked. Did he hurt you?
An old woman, by the wear in her voice, and that made Lu hate Pilkvist more. Lu coiled her fingers around the bars.
I'm fine now. Are you?
She held up the Helica. The woman shook her head, cloak rippling.
Thank you, dear, she cooed. But the last time you offered me medicine, you said it might be poisoned, so forgive me for not trusting you.
Lu stared.
Vex?
22. It had been easy to slip into Pilkvist's prison while Kansu kept them distracted. The high of the con made Vex giddy, and unprepared for his reaction when he saw Lu get tossed into the cell across from him. Relief socked him in the stomach so hard he couldn't breathe. He might have hugged her, but two sets of cell bars stopped him from making an ass of himself. When she figured out who he was, Vex threw back the hood of his cloak with a roguish grin.
Surprised, dear? He asked in a parody of an old crone.
Lu used the bars to climb to her feet.
How?
Realization dawned.
Kansu, I thought...
That she'd come to ally with Pilkvist?
Vex stood.
She did. Or might have, if Pilkvist wasn't in cahoots with Argrid, but I'm guessing by the greenish tint to your face that either this turned out to be an Argridian plot or they gave you some bad river snake jerky.
Lu didn't react to any of that.
Where is Teo?
With some of Kansu's raiders on the meander.
She pushed all emotion off her face, as if showing it might give him some leverage over her.
What's the plan?
Vex tugged on the bars.
I don't suppose you have Sweet Pete handy?
Lu gave him a stare so furious that he didn't have to look at her to feel it.
You don't have an escape plan? Kansu will leave us here?
Vex drew his shoulders back.
Hey, I made Kansu tear off into the night the moment she told us what had happened. I was only supposed to make sure you weren't dead, and you aren't, so I succeeded. The rescue party should be showing up soon.
Why would you have cared if I was dead?
Oh, yes, you wouldn't get those elixirs I promised, but I think you have more at risk than what you have led me to believe.
Vex narrowed his eye at her.
Why do you do that?
Do what?
Your voice.
He pointed at Lou's head.
It gets formal, usually when you're trying to intimidate me.
The bigger issue at hand is that I heard you talking with Nayeli.
Ah.
Vex nodded to cover his wince.
I figured.
You lied to me.
Lou pressed as close to the bars as she could. Two paces separated their cells, and Vex was glad for that cushion of safety.
You led me to believe you had nothing to do with Ibarra's disappearance.
We're back to Ibarra now, are we? What is your relationship with him, when you had connections to Argrid all along?
Lou deflated.
I expected you to turn on me. You're a raider.
But I was a fool because I thought even a raider would not endanger a child. Teo worships you, and if for no other reason than that, you should have told me.
Now Vex was the one to press against his cell's bars.
I'm getting tired of you accusing me of endangering that kid. I've done nothing but keep him safe since we started this misguided romp, while you're the one who left him alone as you were trying to run away. Kansu was certain you were going to sic the council on us, until you refused to tell the Mechts where I was. Which I find confusing. Someone who hates me as much as you claim to wouldn't protect me like that.
I wasn't protecting you. I was protecting the Tunkians. You've been...
Voices carried from the hall, drawing closer.
This isn't over,
Lou hissed. Vex hefted his cloak back up and slumped into the wall. But he smiled stupidly. If the Mechts had tortured Lou, there was no way she'd tear into him with her usual level of passion. She was fine.
Well, she was fantastically pissed at him, but fine.
The door opened. Two people stumbled in, shoved forward by Pilkvist's men. Vex kept as still as possible until the raiders locked the new prisoners in the remaining two cells and left. Your plan was to get Nayeli and Etta captured too? Lou asked.
Brilliant. How long until Pilkvist realizes it isn't a coincidence that he was able to collect your whole crew?
Vex threw off the cloak again. Look, I understand you're upset. I've been lying to you, but I swear on whatever you hold most holy that I am not, despite your low opinion of me, acting out of selfishness, and I'll explain it. But goddammit, can we get out of this hellhole first? It smells like a crocodile's ass in here.
Gladly.
Both Lou and Vex faced the cell where Nayeli stood, smiling.
Lou, she exclaimed. You're not dead.
Nayeli crouched, prying at the laces of her boots.
They check your shoes if they're smart for hatches and whatnot, but they never check the laces.
She unraveled the first one, revealing the long stalk of a plant wrapped around the lace.
You hid explosive hemlite in your shoes?
Lou balked.
Of course.
Vex braced for Lou to tell her how stupid that was. But she laughed.
You're mad, Lou gasped.
Nayeli winked at her.
You stood up to Kansu. And I've done riskier things for dumber reasons.
When she finished unraveling the laces, 8 strands of hemlite lay on the floor to her cell.
Etta?
Vex asked.
On it.
Etta reached into one of her pockets and came up with a key ring.
Lifted it off the raiders as they were leaving.
Etta pushed out of her cell and let out Nayeli, who went to the door, testing the handle as Etta freed Vex and Lou. Vex swept out of his cell, arms spread.
What did I tell you? A rescue.
Lou punched him in the stomach. Vex doubled over, a cough breaking apart the curse he managed to squeak out. He cradled his gut and squinted up at Etta for help. But Etta shrugged.
You deserved that.
Muscle by muscle, Vex managed to stand upright.
This feels familiar, he panted.
At least it wasn't your nose this time, Lou said.
Fair point.
Nayeli looked over her shoulder.
There's no lock on this side. We'll have to blow it.
Vex's eyes went to Lou, who was testing her injured leg. The Helica had worked wonders, but she'd still be weak from wounds that deep.
Follow us, Etta told her. If you can't make it, we'll carry you.
Lou's grimace revealed that she was less than thrilled with that idea. But Nayeli batted everyone back, took aim, and launched Hemlight at the door. An explosion ruptured the wood, sending smoke and splinters into the air. Lou lifted her arm to shield her eyes. The dust hadn't yet settled when Nayeli ripped open the door and ran out, wavering for a beat as the others scrambled after her. Four closed doors lined the hall. Left would lead them to the main front chamber. To the right, the hall ended in a door with vines snaking under the threshold. Lou started for that one, but Nayeli held her back.
They'll expect us to take the quickest route outside, she said as the door that led to the main room rattled, voices rising from the other side.
Hey!
One of the raiders shouted.
The keys are missing!
Etta huffed a laugh and shoved open the door to a room across from the prison cells. The rest of them slipped inside and shut the door as raiders kicked into the hallway. The new room was dark, a lone window showing the dismal swamp beyond. Boxes were stacked along the walls and a table filled the center. Etta pressed her ear to the door's seam while Nayeli recounted their escape options, but Lou hobbled away, her eyes on a mortar and pestle on the table. Next to it sat a bell jar like the one she'd used to capture the drooping fern smoke, along with a cup holding scalpels and knives. At the back of the room, more boxes sat open, revealing plants like she had seen on the steamboat. Drooping fern, helica, variegated holly, aloe pipe, and...
Cleanse root?
Lou grabbed the vial, gaping at the rare plant.
What?
She surveyed the room again. The variety of plants. The equipment.
This is a laboratory, she said.
Vex frowned.
So?
Raiders don't combine botanical magic, at least they've never been known to. They sell the raw materials. Mixing plants into tonics or breaking them down takes finesse that most raiders don't waste time on, or they would rather use individual plants for their singular effects. She expected Vex to make a flippant remark, but he jutted his chin at the crate.
What's it mean that the raiders have a setup like this?
They could be trying to make any number of things. Why, though, I couldn't. But she remembered the raider Pilkvist had treated like a servant. The tremors he'd shown. Her hand tightened on the cleanse root.
One of Pilkvist's men has shaking sickness. Maybe...
Not all of these plants were meant for healing, though. Most of them weren't even from Mecht territory. They would have had to trade with the Tunkians to get this much helica, and with the Northeastern Grosden Syndicate to get the Alova pipe. The syndicates didn't get along enough to have regular trade set up between them. It was why uniting them all during the revolution had been such a challenge. They hated each other. Likely, Pilkvist had stolen these plants then. But why so many? Lou paused. This room had dozens of crates, all likely containing plants, and the equipment on the tables. Jars, mortars, pestles, clamps. A raider would need only empty vials to store the magic plants before selling them here, or shipping them to the mainland. The Mecht Syndicate was equipped for mass production of prepared magic. What were they trying to make? Why would they need such a variety? Were they delving into prepared magics to compensate for the council taking over the mainland trade? The door squealed as Etta pulled it open.
They're gone. Move, now!
Nayeli sprinted out behind Etta, and Lou slid the cleanse root and a few other vials into her pocket before shuffling forward. Every step made her wince, faltering.
Vex started out the door, cursed, and swung back to her. I'm fine. Lou brushed him away, but he looped her arm around his neck.
Shut up.